Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
I can't. Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 23rd day of September, Anno Domini 2023, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
And he's
I'm
live. Right? And he's live here in the studio, and I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And today, just for a change, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Did you pay your dues? Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. First piece of news, ladies and gentlemen. I'm back, butches. That's right. I took a third of a year off.
Deserved. Well deserved.
Thank you. Spent the time in Aruba. Oh, I hate these
chairs.
Stinking stupid chairs.
Tahiti, a magical place?
It was a magical place. And it was rehab. I tore my left quadricep, which, as I say, makes me sound so athletic. There I was, abseiling.
Bulking up.
Yeah, abseiling down K2 with a Yeti under each arm. But I'm back. It wasn't just the quadricep. It was dehydration and kidney failure and all.
Life getting in the way, you know, of what you want to do and what the body says you're going to do.
Exactly right. But I'm back. Dennis and Chris did an amazing job corralling Stephen and Dave while I was out. Great job. But I'm back. And so we're back to the original nonsense today. And I'm going to take just a moment and see if I can plant my...
Yeah, get yourself comfortable.
Plant my slightly... Less well, he's posterior.
We got to have him get you the other chair in here, because that's a little lower or too high for you.
Too high for me. I can't sit on it. I cannot. Okay, that's simple enough. All right, let us start with something approximating the news. Apple. When I left, it was an Apple
really?
Thing,
Apple?
And now it's an Apple thing. Apple has released yet another round of security patches to address three actively exploited zero-day flaws impacting, I beg your pardon for using impact as a verb, iOS, iPadOS, macOS, watchOS, and Safari, taking the total tally of zero-day bugs discovered in its software this year to 16. The list of security vulnerabilities includes a certificate violation issue, in the security framework that could allow a malicious app to bypass signature validation. That's right. A security flaw in the kernel that could allow a local attacker to elevate their privileges, and a WebKit flaw that could result in arbitrary code execution when processing specially crafted web content. Apple did not provide additional specifics, barring an acknowledgement that the issue may have been actively exploited against versions of iOS before iOS 16.7. The updates are available for the following devices, well, for the following operating systems: iOS 16.7 and iPadOS 16.7, iOS 17.01 and iPadOS 17.0.1, macOS Monterey 12.7 and macOS Ventura 13.6, watchOS 9.6.3 and watchOS 10.0.1. Oh, yeah, this is low. Safari 16.6.1. This disclosure comes 2 weeks after Apple resolved two other actively exploited zero days that have been chained as part of a zero-click iMessage exploit chain named BlastPass to deploy a mercenary spyware known as Pegasus. This was followed by both Google and Mozilla shipping fixes to contain a security flaw that could result in arbitrary code execution when processing a specially crafted image. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Apple Patches 3 0-day flaws. Your choices are, I'm already patched. I'll patch shortly. I'll get to it. Go in commando, baby. And Apple? So far, we've got 17 votes, of which Apple is far in the lead. But you should, and we have two have already patched, which is good. Patching is very important. I know that there are a lot of Mac people who, to this day, do not seem to understand that Macs can get vulnerabilities. And
yeah, because that's been set going on now for quite a few years.
Yeah.
Because back in the day, they used to be able to tout, oh, well, we don't get them.
Right.
And it's like the virus and spyware people said, oh, yeah, really? Kind of took it on as a challenge to see, all right, well, we're going to throw a monkey wrench into that and make you just as vulnerable. And they're doing it.
Yep. And so you want to be very careful. It doesn't matter what your... it doesn't matter what your system is, Mac, Windows, Linux, anything, you can have, and there are vulnerabilities on every one of those platforms. So for heaven's sake, get yourself patched.
And by the way, the updates are free.
And the updates are free. Why are you not doing it?
They take a little time.
Don't make me angry. I just got back. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
And that's usually why people don't do it, is it takes time. They don't want to get interrupted, and they don't want to have to restart their computer.
Right.
Right.
But, okay, so when you go to bed, hit restart.
Well, now here's the thing. And I actually put this in a post on Facebook and Counter Social and Mastodon.
Mm-hmm.
I updated my MacBook Pro. Now, admittedly, it's an old 2016 or something, and it's an Intel
sure.
MacBook. But in the time that it updated, I updated sequentially my Linux desktop,
right.
My Linux laptop, two Raspberry Pis, and I forgot to mention a Chromebook.
That's interesting, because I ate two Raspberry Pis while I was waiting for mine.
All right.
Yeah, some take longer than others. It's true.
Yeah, it's true. Give us a call, 585-9... Do I remember these numbers? 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415.
Well, see, I know you criticized me when we first started out because I wasn't getting the numbers.
Yeah.
But if you sit here where I'm sitting and you look at his sheet...
Okay.
I defy you to read the telephone number.
Oh, is there glare on it?
Oh, there's big time glare. That's why I finally
said... And the nice laminated sheet that they put out for us.
We've been here in this studio for over 14 years, and you haven't memorized the numbers yet?
He has the knowledge in the world, you know?
No one memorizes any numbers. There's Jake, Speedal 1, yes, Speedal 2.
That's it's the true. Nielsen that's Norman here.
Or it's, you know,
I don't even know my wife's phone number. Yes.
I don't. I know my wife's phone number only because of the word that it creates.
Uh-oh.
Which I'm not going to tell you, but I don't know my daughter's number.
But it's just the way we are. You know, we're so used to contactless now and
true.
Everything else. Back in the day, I can remember as a kid remembering, you know, GR3 and then the phone numbers.
Right.
They had letters and numbers for phone numbers.
Right.
Matter of fact, I found...
Klondike 5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got from an old fence company... One of their signs that they used to hook onto the with their phone number.
And it's spelled out like that?
It's the GR and then the phone number.
Oh, my goodness.
I thought, oh, wow. And it's still in good shape.
Vintage.
Yeah.
Vintage item.
Yeah.
Yep.
But folks, just like we've talked in the past, you know, about party lines and being able to hear the folks, you know, can I have the phone? Well, when am I done? You know,
because right.
people get on there.
And I know my spouse is because I have to keep entering it at Wegmans every time when I want the discounts.
Oh, yeah.
At the checkout. So, it gives me an opportunity to practice that one.
Right. Speaking of turning your phone number into words, my Google Voice number
okay.
is I'm Nick F.
Is it really?
Yes.
That's impressive.
Thank you. I got it like day one. And
sure.
They were actually saying, what number do you want?
Right.
Well, I want 466-4253. I'm Nick F.
Right.
And they said, oh, that's available in your area code. Here it is.
So you pumped your fist.
Sweet. Yeah. Yeah, baby.
And you pointed at the screen and said, honey, come here, look at this. And she just rolled her eyes.
Yeah, I don't care.
Yeah, great.
Exactly. So, yeah, that's my Google Voice number.
Very nice. So now everybody can call you on your Google Voice line.
Yeah, but my Google Voice line I don't necessarily answer.
No,
I'm not one
you
of
get
those
the voicemails.
People who has to answer the phone.
No, they'll just leave funny voicemails for
you. You know, that annoys the heck out of me.
What's that?
When people will get a text, and you could be sitting, you know, say having a meeting or sitting just having family conversation or anything else, and people are rude.
What do you mean?
And answering the phone, whether it's talking or, you know, texting,
right.
Especially.
It's like you chose to spend time with me. So
wait a minute. They're more important.
So spend time with me.
Yeah. Then what we're talking about, they can't wait. Well, they sent me so answer them after. How do they know you've got your phone right there? I knew a couple people that used to tick me off. Well, it's rude not to answer them right back. It's rude to do, you know, interrupt while we're having dinner or anything else.
I've walked out on people. I have. Clearly, this is more important than spending time with me. I get it. I'll leave.
Yeah, that just...
And if I have to, like, there have been times, you know, my daughter was traveling, and I'm expecting to get text messages from her.
Right.
Not that I ever get them, but I'm expecting to. You know, we made it to the airport. Whatever.
That's
and
important
so I'll tell
stuff.
People. I'll tell people. I apologize, but my daughter's traveling. And
right.
I'm expecting.
And you lead the conversation with that. Yes.
That's different.
You set the expectation.
Right.
We get that a lot when I call customers. In fact, I hate calling customers. you leave a message. They'll call back, and they haven't listened to the message.
It's occupational hazard.
Right. The message was probably your computer's done, or the message is we need your password. Oh, I'm driving now. I can't get it. Well, then don't call. Don't answer the phone. I'm at a soccer game now. Can I call you later? Don't answer the phone.
Right, exactly.
So we text everybody. We text an email, and then half the time they say they don't get our messages. Well, we can say on this date and this time, it logged that it sent.
Sure. You've got that receipt there.
Yeah. Well, okay, you didn't see it. That's different than you didn't get it.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, that just annoys me when, you know, people do that. You know, they think they got to. No, they don't. What happened before we had cell phones? You know, it'd go to an answering machine at home, and you might not get home for many hours.
It's all about instant gratification.
Well, nobody's old enough to remember that.
Right. Me.
Yeah.
You. Not you. Maybe not you. Certainly not you.
Uh-oh.
You. The big thing is it makes you feel important.
Yeah.
Oh, when people have contacted you from
far
away.
Right. Excuse me. Someone's calling me. I'm important.
Yes, I have important things to be informed about and notified of.
Yeah, right. My answer to that is...
Yeah, I understand what your answer is. All right, let us go to the phones. Our first caller is Josh from Fairport, New York. Hiya, Josh. What's up?
Hey, guys. I just had a question. I heard this last week about the iPhone 12 was reported to have... what they said in Europe was radiation emission levels that they were uncomfortable with or might be unsafe. Did you guys hear anything about that?
Yeah, we did. That's actually one of the other news articles, I think, that I've got. Did I get that? Yeah. French regulators have decided that there's too much radiation. I'll move that one up. We'll talk about that next. A little too much radiation. In the coming off the iPhone 12.
Okay.
Which they just discontinued last week and don't sell anymore.
Which they don't sell anymore.
So banning their sales in France doesn't really mean anything.
But I've got one in my pocket, so maybe fill me in on what the French think is.
Right.
Well, but
it's trouble.
Belgium doesn't care, Denmark doesn't care, America doesn't care.
Okay.
Nobody else cares but France.
So they have tighter limits on those types
different
of things?
Different limits, anyway.
Okay.
So,
different.
Apple believes the software patch will be enough. They're putting in a software patch to fix that, that should allow the iPhone 12 to sail through future radiation tests. saying it looks forward to the iPhone 12 continuing to be available in France. Apparently not anywhere else on the planet, but certainly in France. Now, look, this is, you know...
We should define radiation. It's not the radiation that
not nuclear radiation.
Yeah.
Right.
Electromagnetic radiation.
Yeah.
Right. This is, of course, separate from, but similar to, power lines irradiate your brain, microwaves irradiate your brain.
You're being inundated.
Your television irradiates your brain.
Yeah, you're being inundated with radio waves and telephone, television radiation waves already.
And daily.
But, you know, because with a phone, people hold it up to their heads.
Yeah.
Sure.
They're much closer to that source of radiation.
True.
So that's one of the concerns of the French. But, again, pretty much every other regulatory body on the planet is not concerned.
The levels are fine.
The levels are fine.
Okay.
So I wouldn't get too excited about it. Also, if you're one of those people who holds their phone like they're on television, where you hold it away from your face.
Oh, like a slice of pizza.
Like a slice of pizza and talk into it there because that's what they do on television, so it must be the right way to do it, even though the only reason they do it on television is so you can hear both sides of the conversation.
It sounds like you have an opinion about this, Nick. What should we
know? I do. It's the stupidest thing I've ever seen. Like, my favorite part is people talk like this and then can't hear the answer, so they go, what?
Or they turn the speakerphone on, so everyone hears the
answer. Everyone hears
the
answer.
Oh, yeah.
And so I just found
that's all ages.
Yeah, I found the rating here. So it's 5.7 watts per kilogram of radiation.
Okay.
Kilogram?
Yes. So how many kilograms does the iPhone weigh? A quarter of a kilogram?
Oh, I see.
So it's 5 watts per phone. Well, that's what you charge the phone with, is a 5-watt charger.
Right. Yeah. It's not what it's running.
Yeah.
And the EU
if
limit.
If it ran at 5 watts, you would discharge it in half an hour.
Yeah. And the EU limit is 4 watts.
Mm-hmm. That's considerably more percentage-wise.
Yeah, that's 25% more than allowed. But it's 1 watt.
Oh, 25%, yeah.
Yeah, 1 watt more.
Yeah, 1 watt more.
So, all right, take your average 100-watt light bulb.
Right.
Divide that at 100 times.
Right.
It sure did. Thanks a lot, guys. Yep.
Thanks, Josh.
Yeah, take care.
Yeah, continue to use your iPhone 12. You know, you're going to have chips in the brain anyway from Elon Musk's Neuralink. So
I've read some interesting anecdotal evidence from state, police in general, about radar guns because they're emitting radio and range detection. Radar is radio. And there was concerns about the radar guns. And so a lot of the cop cars have the radar gun mounted on the driver or the driver's rear window. And there have been a higher than normal incidence of brain cancer on the left side.
Interesting.
The handheld radar guns, there's been a higher than normal incidence of testicular cancer.
They set it down their laps.
In their lap. Yeah, right. There's been no causation yet, but
correlation.
The anecdotal evidence.
Yeah, anecdotal evidence may indicate. And that also may be from the last 50 years of real high-intensity radar guns.
Yeah. I suspect they're a lot more sensitive now.
Yeah.
Technology has changed, too.
Yep. And most of them are using laser instead of radar.
Well, Apple would love for you to just buy a 15 now.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, well, the
toss your 12, get a 15.
They still sell the 14 and the 13 if you don't need the latest whiz-bang features.
Right.
But what has happened is that the mini phone, the 12 mini.
I have one of those.
Was the last of the minis available?
Well, a 13 mini.
13 mini, yeah. And they've discontinued that. So you can go back to the 4.7-inch SE, it's a special edition, third generation.
Mm-hmm.
Or you have to jump up to the 6.1-inch iPhone 13.
So my daughter just got the 15, got it delivered yesterday. And I'm a 12 mini user. And I've been a mini user. Well, this is my first mini phone, but I really like it because it fits nicely in the pocket.
Yeah.
When you hold it in your left hand, your thumb can hit all four corners of the phone without having to use your other hand.
It's basically a small phone with a big screen.
Yeah. And so I said, all right, well, let's set it down on the table here. And I set mine next to it. And I said, okay, well, it's about the same width. It's about a finger's width taller. And so then I set it right on top, and it was very close. So I said, all right. If I had to go just to the 15 and not the Pro Max aircraft carrier lunch tray that they sell, then I could probably do that. But yeah, I've really enjoyed the Mini. I wish they would. Maybe they'll bring it back sometime. I don't know.
Well, that's why a lot of people are going with the foldy phones.
Mm-hmm. True.
You know, whichever way they fold, whether they fold open like a book or they fold open like a flip phone.
Yes.
Horizontally or vertically, it means you have a smaller screen when you want a smaller screen.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a nice big screen. I mean, one of them opens up to almost 7-8 inches.
Yeah. No, that's an iPad mini at that point.
Yeah,
that's,
exactly.
That's a mini tablet.
So you have a phone when you want a phone and a tablet when you want a tablet, and it's the same device.
Right.
So, yeah, I get that. I do. It's a pretty interesting concept. My daughter has one. The
Fold,
the Galaxy, the one that looks like a flip phone.
Right. I've seen that one.
And I'm insanely jealous every time she pulls it out of her pocket.
I've seen it at the stores. And it looks nice.
It's so, and she, you know, she's a 30-year-old.
Yeah.
So she's using it 70,000 times a day.
Right. Torture
and
test.
It works great.
Yeah.
And there hasn't been a problem.
Well, if it's good enough for her.
Exactly.
Well, they've been advertising the other one that opens up vertically.
Yeah.
And that looks, you know, like one heck of a big square.
Right.
Well, exactly. That's an iPad mini. And I mean, essentially, that's the size you're going to end
so
up
with. So you can see all your email and respond back. And Yeah.
Or if you want, you know, if you're watching a video.
Yes.
You're
right.
Not watching it on that tiny. My daughter, of course, she watches it on the front half.
Okay.
Because her eyes are still perfect, and I hate her for that.
Yeah.
So
Her
time is coming, but she watches on the front half sometimes, and it's like, okay. And then she gets messages. She just looks at the front half and then puts it down, and I'm going, I can't even see the phone!
There's a phone there?
Wait, exactly. What are we doing?
And you're reading the messages
You got one of those implanted screens in your hand?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, projects from your elbow onto your wrist.
Yep, so... I do envy her that phone. I admit it. It's a pretty neat phone. She also got one of those the Amazon Kindle.
Kindle,
the
right.
Kindle that Paperwhite, one of the 6-inch one.
Yeah.
So I just ordered, and it's showing up today.
Okay.
I just ordered the Onyx Books BOOX.
Mm-hmm.
Poke 5, which is a 6-inch
e-ink
tablet, and it's an Android tablet. It's only Android 11.
Okay,
but I don't care because all I'm using it for is
reading.
Every reader on the planet,
right.
You know, because I could get the Amazon Kindle, but I was one of the people who was beta testing the Nook.
Yeah.
So I've got a lot of books on the Nook.
Right.
I mean, a lot. So I want...
That was the Barnes & Noble?
That's the Barnes & Noble one.
Okay.
So I want to be able to read that on an Android tablet.
Right.
I can load the app and read that.
I
have a lot of... Back in the day when Google first started doing this stuff, they were giving away free books.
Right.
I got a lot of books in Google Reader. That's not what it's called, but in the Google thing.
Yeah.
And... I don't want to lose those either.
Sure.
So having, you know, that I think that little 6-incher is going to be better on my eyes for long. While I was in rehab, I was reading 10 hours a day.
Oh, boy.
And there were times when my eyes were pretty...
There's finally time to read.
Exactly.
It's like the Twilight Zone, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Except you didn't break your glasses.
Time enough and something.
Burgess Meredith.
Yeah. All right. That's it. Half an hour of our time together has gone by, but oh, we've got three times that coming shortly, so don't go too far. Take a little quick break, but we'll be back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we, collectively, are Soundbites.
Still.
Mm-hmm.
And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415.
And folks, that's not your ears playing tricks on you. He is actually here live, not at home.
It's true.
That's right.
In the studio with us back to our old routine here at
I'm a little shocked that I remembered how to get here. Thank you very much. And the crowd goes wild. I have not driven. I took my wife to her chemo appointment on Tuesday, but until then, I had not driven for 4 months.
Yeah. How'd that feel?
I honestly got behind the wheel and thought, can I do this?
It's like, wait, okay. Which pedal? Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. 4 months. It's a skill that you have to keep up. It's a losable mm-hmm. skill.
Oh, wait a minute. There's something with a key, right?
Exactly.
Where's that go?
But I made it here today, so we're good.
I remember when I was a kid learning how to drive, it was always a big deal, driving home from church.
Oh.
And one day my dad said, maybe I want to drive.
Yeah, you're right. Sometimes I like to drive, I admit it. All right. Google has been trying to publicly pressure Apple into adopting the GSMA's RCS, or Rich Communication Service Messaging Protocol,
okay,
for a long time now with nothing to show for it. As a matter of fact, Apple CEO Tim Cook, or as some of you prefer, Tim Apple, seemed to completely dismiss the idea when he answered a question on the subject by saying that consumers should buy their moms an iPhone. Google and its Android platform aren't giving up that easily, and they've just released a snarky ad to continue criticizing Apple's preferred messaging platform. The ad's called iPager and mimics Apple's marketing language to reveal a retro-styled beeper indicating that Apple's behind the curve with its chosen messaging platform. The spot states that the iPager uses outdated messaging tech to text with Android, citing many of the perceived disadvantages of sticking with SMS technology when communicating with Android phones. Google didn't invent this comparison whole cloth, as the 30-year-old SMS technology actually dates back to old-school pagers. Apple's continued use of SMS messaging does hobble Android integration in a few ways, but the reverse is also true. Most famously, there's the dreaded green bubble.
Bum, bum, bum.
Exactly, when texting an Android user from an iPhone. See, that doesn't bother me because I'm not on the iPhone.
Right.
I don't see that you get a green bubble, and I don't care.
Right, yeah.
You get okay. a gray bubble.
I just get the same bubble I always get.
It's always the same, yeah.
There are some feature-breaking bugs inherent to group chats between iOS and Android users. And images sent from Android phones to iPhones tend to be rather pixelated. This is yet another side effect of those interoperability issues. One-on-one RCS messages have been end-to-end encrypted since 2021, with group chats following suit just last month. iMessage texts have long been encrypted too, but only from iPhone to iPhone. Google's latest ad shines an admittedly slanted light on the vulnerabilities consumers face when texting across operating systems, as those SMS texts are not encrypted. Additionally, RCS text messages lose encryption when making the leap to iOS devices. It's anyone's guess why Apple should make this change and not Google, despite RCS being a more globally adopted standard. This ad's unlikely to convince Apple to change anything, as it's only the latest salvo in Google's snark campaign. Back in 2022, the company spoofed Drake to pile on Apple, and there have been plenty of other minor jabs at Cupertino's expense at events like I.O. 2022 and on social media. We all know Apple is notoriously stubborn when it comes to adopting non-proprietary technology, especially if it views the changes unnecessary. No matter who's to blame, these interoperability issues are annoying for consumers and bad for data privacy, which is the big thing. Maybe an antitrust case will get this sorted one day. So, do you care if your text messages are private? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
In addition to Tim Cook saying the journalist should buy an iPhone, he said, I don't hear our users asking about that, and we don't put a lot of energy in it
right
at this point. But so who's asking for it? Google's asking for it. iPhone users don't care. They're annoyed that
But iPhone users should care in the right environment.
Yeah.
So if you're in a business, right, both Android and iPhone users mm-hmm. should care, because if you're in a business, you do not necessarily dictate what phone people have.
Right.
And if you are in a yeah. group chat and passing secrets, business secrets, around in a group chat.
Right. That needs to be managed.
That needs
yeah.
to be managed.
That needs to be managed.
And encrypted.
And encrypted. Now, at your place of business,
mm-hmm.
not everybody has an iPhone.
Correct.
And if you are, if somebody's saying, we're going to change the this and that, and we're going to add this, and we're going to do something. That stuff gets passed in clear.
Mm-hmm.
and that's not good.
Right.
And two-factor authentication picked up on text messaging because everyone had a phone,
right?
Which is good to have a second factor, but text messaging is not encrypted, not secure. It can be easily spoofed.
Right.
So it's not a perfect two-factor. That's why so many places are now doing authenticator apps instead of text messaging.
And that makes sense to me. But when you're talking about – and I don't know why Apple wants to use a 30-year-old technology when there's a much newer and better technology available. This is – for Apple, that's weird.
Well, the hope was that they were going to make iMessage for Android so that you didn't – that could be your texting app.
It's a – It's a standoff.
Which has kind of come to Android a little bit because there's an iMessage part of the iCloud for Windows service. So you can get iMessages through your
Windows. Every Android user wants to have more Windows stuff and more Apple stuff on their
and
phone.
Additional apps to check for their messages.
What if you're already using Windows and have an iPhone, you probably have iCloud. But then if you're using Android, you're not going to have iCloud.
You're not going to have iCloud, and you're already using a messaging service. We already see a problem with people when they buy a Samsung phone.
Yeah.
The default messaging thing is the Samsung message,
right.
Which is not the same as the Android message.
And I get a lot of people saying, why aren't you answering my messages? Well, I didn't get them because they're on Facebook Messenger, which just says Messenger. Doesn't say Facebook Messenger on it.
Right.
Or WhatsApp.
Right.
To Apple's point, there's lots of other communication programs that don't talk to each other, so we're not doing anything unusual.
Yeah, but
it would be better in the long run, better for their users.
Yeah,
which is what Apple always touts.
I am an Apple fanboy, but I do like my protocols open. You know, I like
exactly.
I like HTTPS, and I like things that are encrypted. But
it needs to be a T-shirt. I like my protocols open.
Yes,
I like it. I want one. This harkens back to Microsoft in the old days, how late they were to the internet because they didn't think it was important.
Right. Just a fad.
It's Luddite-ism, quite honestly.
Well, it's that, and it's that not invented here syndrome, right?
Exactly.
So if it's not something that we came up with, that we can patent, that we can use as a competitive advantage, then maybe they don't. Not that interested yet.
So all right.
When my wife was a kid, her dad never bought a color television because that's just a fad. So she was stuck watching Star Trek on a black and white television.
When I was a kid, we had one of the first televisions in our neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Every neighbor would come over to watch, you know, whatever the 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, whatever show was. And then that tapered off.
Okay.
And then we got one of the first color TVs in it because my mother wanted it.
Uh-huh.
And when your wife wants something...
Sure.
The proper husband just goes, yes, honey.
Especially when it's a gadget.
Especially when it's a gadget. So we had one of the first color TVs.
You say, I'll be
suddenly
right back.
We had a living room full of people again.
Yes.
The first time I actually saw
Francesco's was
a
place
color,
to be.
I was shocked.
All the costumes were in color.
Yeah. People had different colors, and it meant something on the
That's
bridge.
Right.
It was very weird. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Brent from Fairport, New York. What's up, Brent?
Well, I'm glad Nick is back because I got a question for his favorite topic, Windows 11.
Oh, nice for you to call. Thanks, Brent. Bye-bye.
Anyway, I got a little computer back in May, and it had Windows 11 on it, and I didn't want to do much with it with LibreOffice and a browser. And I downloaded Chrome browser, and I've been using it no problems. But a few days ago, it started to do some glitches, so I did what I thought was a rollback. To 2 weeks before that, then everything was working fine, but my Chrome browser is gone. And I can download the installer, but it won't work.
So,
you know, it gets up to the point, says, do you want to let your computer make this? Do you want to run it as administrator? And I do all that. And I think it's running, but nothing happens. The installer.
Can you go in and change the default browser? In settings? You know how you can go and change all your settings for default for the email and the movies? And,
but I don't think it'll find Chrome.
I'm wondering if the registry key that says Chrome is installed is messed up.
Well,
due to the rollback?
And I did some research, and I found... I found exactly that, and I looked at the, you know, I looked at the registry, and I found some interest for Chrome, but I think I know enough not to mess around with it.
Yeah, you should download Revo Uninstaller.
Yeah, I was going to say Revo Uninstaller.
And make sure that Chrome gets completely uninstalled.
Oh, okay.
So then the installer knows how to install it again. It's probably seeing there's pieces already there. I don't need to do anything.
Because one of the other features within Revo, down at the bottom, is looking for remnants.
Okay.
And within Revo, you can have it look for leftover garbage that programs leave behind, which, again, which we've said for a long time, slows machines down.
Uh-huh.
Because they leave all their junk behind, and it takes longer to go through the registry. So definitely, I highly recommend Revo. And if you have multiple computers, what I did, it's because I do, is I downloaded the version that you can put onto a USB drive. So I can go from computer to computer and put it in there. It sees it and it'll do all the stuff that you want it to do. But I only had to buy one version, but it's good for multiple computers.
Yeah, that's a good idea. By the way, I was able to download Firefox.
Right.
Which I think uses Google search, but I'm not sure.
Well, you can set any search you want.
But it doesn't use any part of Google's Chromium engine.
Right. Oh, okay.
Where Microsoft Edge does use the Chromium engine now.
Yeah, but they don't like you doing anything other than what they've got.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that actually reinforces the idea that it's a registry upset with Chrome if Firefox installed okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much. I'll give that a try. I'm glad everybody's healthy again.
Thank you. We all are, too. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks.
So, yeah, it's...
still this side of the dirt.
Yeah, we're all this side of the dirt, and that's interesting. Wake up and you look up and you see a ceiling. You're in
good
shape.
I'm looking down at the flowers, not up.
That's right.
You got to check the obits every day to see if you're in it.
Yeah. But in terms of Windows 11, it's that registry. Windows has always had that registry thing, which just isn't good. I don't care what anybody says. It just
it must
isn't
have
good.
Made sense at the time.
Really?
To somebody.
Never. No.
Somebody had to sign off on it.
Somebody had to propose it. Somebody had to write it. Somebody had to sign off on it.
I guess so. I don't get it because, look.
Well, no, wait. It was Windows was no big deal. Computers aren't going to matter.
Right.
IBM was saying that because
so
everyone has an IBM in the basement.
Easy.
Yeah.
It was just easy.
Yeah.
And that's why they did it. Lazy programming. And I don't understand it. Linux and the Mach kernel and every other operating system on the planet has individual files for each setup.
Yeah.
Microsoft calls them preferences. No, excuse me. Apple calls them preferences.
Plist.
What?
The plist. Property list.
In the preference folder, yeah.
Right. And in Linux, they're in the etsy folder, etc, et cetera
right.
folder.
And they're all just key value stores, right?
They're so just key value stores. And they're text files.
Right.
So if you actually had to look at them and
you
change
read
them,
and
you could do what you got to do.
Right.
Or if you screw one up because you're a bad programmer, you don't screw up anything else.
Because it's all segregated.
Whereas the registry, it's all in one place, and you can make your machine unbootable. You can brick a Windows machine by a bad registry entry.
And one thing I noticed, though,
that's bad programming. That's bad design.
Right.
But going back to your thing about Linux, that I found is with, when I'm doing stuff on the Raspberry Pi, even, you know, I'll go into, say, one of the files that's CONF files, which stands for config, folks, and make changes, but it always makes a backup of the previous one.
It can, yes.
It will always, with this system, it always makes the original.
Yep.
So I can go back and see all these iterations. If I've made, say, 3 or 4 changes, I can still go back to the original file.
Right, CNF1, CNF2, CNF3.
Yeah.
Yep. You can go back to them, and the other thing is you can back up those files easily, but only the ones that you're interested in. Right, because you know what they're called, you know where they are.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's 50 of them in your Etsy directory, but you're only concerned with 1 or 2 or 3, back them up. Whereas the registry can be 2 gigs, 3 gigs.
Yeah. When I'm dealing with Windows machines, I was working on somebody's Outlook this past week.
Oh, yeah.
And they are a Microsoft 365 user. Sorry. And they have a capability of storage quota in the cloud of 100 gigs for storing all these things. But the version of Outlook, the actual app, is relying on Windows file size limitations and entry limitations. And it was throwing errors because the file size was too big.
Yep.
So I had to go into the registry and say, well, Microsoft Outlook, instead of this max file size, I'm going to bump it up to this other one. And I had to, you know, put it in an octal, and it was all a giant mess.
Yeah,
and it did work, but it was like, oh, it was like doing surgery and just having a weird smell in the air. It was like, oh, you just really don't want to be
And they never learned, because the old versions of Outlook had a 2 gig limit. And then when FAT32 came out, the Outlook had a 4 gig limit. Make it unlimited.
It doesn't. Or, there's no need for a limit anymore.
So
it's just ridiculous. Or
although 100 gigs isn't enough, we had customers that had to move away from Microsoft Exchange and Outlook because they had more than 100 gigs of space.
Well, this particular person had 40 gigs on their local machine, and they needed to be able to send and receive, and Outlook would not go talk to the cloud. Of course, their quota on the cloud was fine. And they could use the cloud-based Outlook, no issue, but they were bumping their head on this local thing that they were composing mail while they're offline and tried to send it. Nope, can't do it, because I can't append that message to the Outbox to be sent, because the Outbox file, along with everything else, is too big.
Again,
that's the other mess with Microsoft, is they have too many products named Outlook that are vaguely related, but they don't really work well together like they're supposed to.
But also, Microsoft is continuing to push people to the web versions of everything.
True.
Because they want the operating system to be online. That's their, and they've been saying this for years to their investors, and you do not lie to the investors.
No, so the SEC gets involved.
That's
They just do not have a sense of humor.
That's exactly right. They want everything to be online. And I get that. I do almost everything myself online. But with me, it's easy. You know, again, I'm about 99% of everything I do is through Google Docs.
Mm-hmm.
It's through the Google Drive.
Yeah.
And so it's easy. I can look it up anywhere. I can use it anywhere. I can do whatever I want. I went to my doctor. And she said, "Well, do you have a list of your?" I saw a new person.
Mm-hmm.
My doctor was on vacation. She says, "Do you have a list of your current medications?" Pulled it up off the cloud.
The list. Yeah, I do the same thing with the smart. You know, the little notes.
Right. Yeah. The ones synchronized.
I've just got it in a document in Google Docs.
Mm-hmm.
And I showed it to her. And she said, "Oh, and I did the same thing with." I take my blood sugar.
Okay.
So I have a spreadsheet.
Sure, with all your readings?
With all the readings and charts and everything. And she looked at it and she said, "Can you send this to me?" Yes, ma'am, I can.
Can I?
You got me
thought
started.
You never ask.
Yeah.
You got me started on the program called Keep Notes.
Keep,
And I use
Google.
That, and that is...
Oh, Google Keep? Yeah.
Yeah,
Keep.
It is fantastic, because you sign into it, and it backs it up to the cloud. So like Nick was saying, I can't remember all the meds that I'm taking, what milligrams and everything else.
Sure.
I just know I'm taking a buttload of pills.
You're right.
Keep me this side of the earth.
Throw a handful in your face every couple hours.
And I just say, they go, "Well, what meds you taking?" So I open up the Keep Notes and say,
"Moment, please.
Here it is, broken down morning and evening." "Oh, that's handy. What are you using?" And I've told a number of folks, I says, it's a lot easier than memorizing. It doesn't matter where I am. It can get to a list.
Right.
Well, I learned a long, long time ago that the farther up the food chain you are, the less they want to read text.
Yeah.
Show them pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Pictures are better. So... By, you know, particularly when it comes to my blood sugar and my blood pressure and all of that stuff.
Sure.
I keep it in a chart. I keep it in a spreadsheet so I can show them the chart.
Right.
And there's a trend line, and as long as the trend line is going down, everybody's happy.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
And that's the way we work it now.
I took an ECG with my watch and showed that to my doctor at a visit. I said, hey, this is something that I'm not sure he had seen it before. But he took a look at it, and he said, oh, okay, I see what you've got going here. And he was able to analyze it. And then just like you were talking about, I was able to turn that into a PDF and send it to him. And he was able to take a look. Now, we still followed up with a real multi-lead
of course.
EEG. But
of course you do.
You've got to verify these things.
Well, they got that little device now that you can take, you know.
Put your fingers on
it. Yeah, you put your fingers
right.
on it for $79 and know how your heart health is.
Yep.
And it'll print it out. And like you say, you can send it if you're concerned about. Of course, I wonder if that creates some folks to become hypochondriacs.
The question is, does that make them hypochondriacs, or are hypochondriacs buying that device?
Bingo.
That's a double-edged sword.
Self-selecting sample there.
Yeah. Exactly correct. But, you know, it happens all the time. My favorite are the drug ads on television that, A, only tell you what they're for once.
Right.
At the very beginning of the ad before you start paying attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I found out I had blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Right. And then, or it's something that's so long.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Triple
Scaffasavitrope. Like, I don't know anymore.
And then they list all the side effects that will kill you.
That'll kill you.
Yes. And they always say, don't take it if you're allergic to this. Well, how do you know that until you take it the first time?
That's exactly right.
And your doctor's going to tell you anyway.
And your doctor's going to tell you.
There's a new one that I thought was so stupid. They sit there and it's for, they show these people and they get the injection to make them look younger.
Oh, okay. The Botox.
Sort of that type of thing. This one I've never seen, you know, it's only seen it a couple times. But yeah, they're going through that whole bit. And one woman going, yeah, I look 5 years younger. And then they go through all the different stuff and they go, oh yeah, and if by chance they wind up injecting it into a vein, it could cause death.
Exactly.
Really?
Well, and the other thing I love is that everything's a three-letter acronym now.
Mm-hmm. Of course. You mean a TLA.
Right, everything's a TLA. They don't tell you what it means.
Right.
But you could get RJW. What the hell is RJW?
I don't know.
So now I either have
RSV.
I have to either ignore it, or RSV, it turns out, is something babies get.
Yeah.
So it's kind of unlikely that you're going to get it.
But they're saying everybody's 60 years older.
Respiratory single tidal virus.
Okay. But anyway, it gets ridiculous. And then they don't tell you what it is. And then there's 600 side effects. And then they add more side effects in tiny little text.
And then when you ask your doctor about it, no, that's if you've had a hysterectomy, you need to update your estrogen.
Exactly. Well,
okay, I don't need that.
I'm pretty sure I don't need that.
Well, that's when you got to sit there and wait, do I want to suffer from this or take this and cause more problems?
Well, and I can't imagine a doctor nowadays. You know, ask your doctor if BLOP is right for you. No, it's not right for you. You're a 73-year-old male. This is for 15-year-old females. No, it's not right for you. Shut up. All right. That music tells us that we have wasted an hour of our lives together for certain select values of waste, but we had a great time. But you know what? It's not done. The good times continue to roll along, as they say in New Orleans, but not in English. We will be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbite. And although we are going to be back in another hour, it'll take a while. So take a little bio break, enjoy yourself, and then come right back to Jazz 90.1, and we'll get a whole nother hour together. And give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And we will see you on the other side.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites.
And we should remind folks, or folks that are just tuning in, because we got a lot of folks that tune in just to the second hour, because life gets in the way. What you're hearing, folks, is actually Nick here in the studios.
This is not a test.
Yep, he is back with us.
It's not an incredible simulation.
Nope. He is live.
It's incredible, here, but not a simulation.
As you will see on our YouTube video as we stream that, Steve's got all that stuff going. So, yes, he is alive, kicking, and back with us, folks.
Yep,
so,
I am.
Be prepared.
I am. Be prepared.
Believe
we were
it.
Talking in the break about hydrogen cars and electric cars.
Yeah.
And I was pointing out that here in Rochester, electricity costs about 13 cents a kilowatt hour. So if you got a 65 kilowatt hour battery, full charge costs about $8.45.
Okay.
You get about 247 miles on a battery, which means it costs you about 3.5 cents a mile.
Right.
Which is a little bit cheaper.
Yeah. I think I'm paying around 10 or 11 cents a mile.
Because you're the last time you're charging somewhere.
Oh, I'm not charging. This is straight gasoline.
Oh, yeah. Now, that assumes that you've got a hookup at home.
Sure.
Right, because if you're paying for like EVgo or ChargePoint or one of those things,
there's a surcharge fee on top of that.
Substantial
surcharge. A convenience fee, yes.
A convenience fee. So, you know, people are saying, well, it costs you $6.25 a mile. Cost you 3.5 cents a mile.
Right.
And there's something also to be said about decentralizing the pollution, because that's what I always go back to.
Right.
Where's the electricity come from? Well, we've got Ginay. Okay, so maybe that's a little polluting. But
well,
we got
Niagara. Very little polluting because it's a nuclear power
right.
plant.
We got Niagara Falls. That's self-generating.
Right.
That's
and Genesee River is hydro.
But
right.
Particularly here in this area, the electricity is very low polluting.
So even if you are getting your electricity from a coal-fired electric plant, it's sort of...
It's one plant.
It's one plant rather than millions of cars.
Right.
Well, maybe 100,000 cars per plant, maybe?
Right.
In certain cities?
Right. So it ends up being much, much, much less.
And it's easier to manage waste product of that.
Building an electric battery pollutes. But once it's built, you're done polluting.
True.
Digging the coal pollutes.
Yeah. Digging the coal pollutes.
You gotta
running
get the lithium
it in your
from
car
somewhere.
Pollutes.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, you start out with a deficit in terms of pollution with an electric car. The thing about cars is you drive them every day.
And
that means that in the gas-powered car, you're building your pollution quotient every day. And in an electric car, you're lowering it.
Mm.
So it's about,
fewer moving parts. You know, you're not getting oil changes. You don't have to replace the muffler. All those parts, you just don't have to lubricate as much. There's just so much less maintenance involved that I think there's... cars last a lot longer. There's not as much stuff to wear out.
Right. Your carbon footprint goes up significantly faster in an ICE V, internal combustion engine vehicle,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to an EV, an electric vehicle. And like I said, here in Rochester, 54% of our energy comes from renewables and nuclear power. So we have much less pollution than other places. Anyway, let's go back to the phones.
Wait a minute. One thing before we go back to the phones, I wonder, you happen to stir... Remind me mm-hmm. that folks, I warned about this, I think it was last week or the week before. October 4th.
Okay.
I'm going to tell folks again. On October 4th at 2 o'clock, around 2:20, you're going to hear your phone go off, sirens go off, warning systems and everything else.
October
so
4th.
Don't be afraid that the world's coming to an end, because it's not. What they're doing is throughout the world testing the early warning system.
Right.
That'd be a good day to plan an attack.
Yeah, it would be.
Quiet,
thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah, but just to put down on your calendar so you're not thinking, oh, what's going on? What's going on? We're telling you up front. It's going to be on October the 4th around 2 o'clock Eastern time.
So. And as Dave said, put it in your phone, and it will remind you that this is only a test.
Yep.
All right, but it is not a test as we go back to the phones and talk to James from Rochester, New York. What's up, James?
First of all, Nick, welcome back. You were greatly missed.
Thank you.
Dave and Steve are excellent.
Dave, quick Steve, question. Dennis, and Rick.
Chris.
Yes,
Chris.
Yes.
Chris. Cheese and crackers. Sorry, Chris.
Okay. I have Windows 10, and I have Chrome and Firefox installed. My question to you is, what is this Microsoft Start on the bottom? Is that part of Edge? Microsoft Start. On the bottom toolbar, they have where the temperature is. If you hover over that, you can some news articles.
Yeah, it's part of Edge. That's part of Edge, and it gets updated with different news articles and everything else that's going on. Locally and throughout the world news.
Yeah, it's a news aggregator. So it's if you click on that, you'll see it's news stories.
Yeah.
So instead of going to a news website.
Right.
Yeah, so it's called Microsoft Start.
Yeah. So it's how you start your day, right, with the news.
Yeah, and also then automatically Edge is also on here.
Yes, you don't. Yeah.
Edge. Microsoft is touting that Edge is built in, just like Windows Explorer was built in.
Okay, that's their own little browser.
Yeah, you can remove the icon from your desktop if you don't use it. Say you use Chrome, you know, you don't have to have it on your desktop. You can
curious what it was. I do read a lot of news articles.
But, yeah, I like that little thing, too. You know, from time to time I'll hit the little, it looks like a wave.
Yeah, and you hover over it.
Yeah, you just click on it, and you can read some of the current news articles and everything else going on.
Yeah, they have tons of news articles.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Tons. All right, I was curious. I've been using it, and I do like it. And obviously, you just explained it's Edge with their own little thing that they have.
Their little twist, yep.
Yeah, I like it. It's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you, and so happy Nick's back, too.
Thank you, me too.
As we are.
Thanks. Yeah, it's fun to be. It's good to be back.
It seems like we go to a lot of effort to put in pop-up blockers so we don't see crap like that.
Right.
And then the browser just installs it in the browser by default.
Yep. I do start my news every day with news.
But you have the sites you know you want to read.
Well, yeah, and also I have a Google Home.
Yeah.
And you can set up a good morning routine.
Right.
And it gives me the temperature and the news and the weather and all the stuff that I want. So it's pretty nice.
Like local highlights and the world highlights.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I like to listen to news before I'm awake.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Who won the big Quidditch match yesterday?
Who won the big Quidditch match? Kabaddi is coming up, so I'm very excited about that.
Kabaddi?
Coming back?
Kabaddi. Okay.
It's that bread you have with coffee?
No, kabaddi is a sport.
It's that ham from Spain.
It's a ham from Spain. Kabaddi is a sport. It's like somebody said. So, what if we took tag and had tackling?
Okay.
Or what if we had soccer without a ball? And here's a problem. If I'm watching the sport, what happens if I forget the name? So one player has to constantly say the name. But trust me, it's an interesting sport.
It sounds like one of those things you have to experience one time.
You have to experience it one time.
It was
you can find all kinds of like highlights and stuff on YouTube.
It was a demonstration sport in the 1936 Olympics.
Yes, it was.
Been around a long time.
It's been out a long time, and it's
mostly from India.
It's huge in the Asian subcontinent, which is probably not what they call it anymore.
So is it like flag football?
No.
Without the ball?
Without the ball or the flags.
Okay.
It's basically tag with tackling.
It sounds like this is our homework for the week, is to watch this.
Kabaddi.
And to come back next week.
K-A-B-A-D-D-I.
Yeah, with D's.
Okay.
Kabaddi. I'm telling you, it's...
You try not to be tackled for 30 seconds, and you get a point if you're not tackled.
What happens is they all line up on one side, and this guy comes over, and his job is to tag somebody and then get back over on his side without being tackled.
Okay.
If he does, that person is out.
Okay.
Once all of them are out, they get to all come back in again.
So it's sort of dodgeball-y, but without the ball.
Without a ball.
Okay.
And the person who comes in to be the tagger has to continually say kabaddi all in one breath throughout that 30 seconds.
Okay. So in one breath, huh?
Circular breathing?
If you can do it.
While you're running.
While you're running. And trying to tackle people, trying to tag people without being tackled, and if you can drag them back over the line with you if they do tackle you.
Right.
There's a whole lot of pretty fascinating. What the heck just happened there?
All right.
I'll
check that out.
It's a fun sport. All right, our next caller is Terry from Webster, New York. What's up, Terry?
Good afternoon, guys. I have Spectrum Roadrunner live mail. And I have a message here that I was trying to sell something a while back, and I put a picture on it, but it was too big. And I got a message that said the message could not be sent because its size exceeded the server's limit. You can use the option tools, accounts, properties, and advance to break the message down. But I sold the item anyway, and I wanted to just get rid of this message that keeps popping up. I can't seem to be able to do it for some reason.
Probably need to go to your outbox and delete it from there so it stops trying to send.
Right.
Oh, the outbox. Okay, like out messages and things like that?
Yep. Right.
Yeah.
So what's happened is it's when you send a message, the first thing that happens is it goes into what's called your outbox.
And
then periodically, what's in the outbox gets actually sent over the wires.
In the olden days when you had to dial into the telephone to send your mail, that outbox was very popular. Nowadays, no one hardly ever sees the outbox because the mail is sent so fast, the outbox is almost always empty.
But it still goes into the outbox. In your case, it can't leave the outbox because it's too big to go.
Yeah.
So it's still stuck in the outbox, and every time your program tries to send it, you're going to get that message. You just can't do it.
Are you using a desktop app, or are you using the web version to read the mail?
An actual desktop app.
You may have to go into Spectrum's webmail to delete it from the outbox there. If you're not seeing the outbox in your program, because your program has already sent it to the mail server, and it may not be coming back to your program saying it's there.
Okay. It's just trying to send it from there.
Yeah. One other thing, when it gave me the directions to try and make it smaller, it said the option is located in tools, accounts, and properties. And where are the, this might be a dumb question, but where is the tools located for that?
Well, that depends on what program you're using and what program they assumed you were using.
Right.
Oh.
So tools is one of the menus in probably they were assuming Microsoft Outlook.
Oh, Outlook.
Right. And if you're not using Outlook, you don't have that option.
Oh.
So it depends on what mail program you're using. May have its own system for breaking up messages. On the Mac, we have MailDrop. It will use iCloud to store the file temporarily and then send a link. If you're using Gmail, it can do the same thing with your Google Drive. It stores the big file on Google Drive and then sends a link to the other end to download it. But Time Warner doesn't have a service like that, so it would be up to your mail program.
So it might be an Outlook then. That's where it's located.
The tools command, the fact is
you don't need it anymore, so just go into the web version of Spectrum Mail and delete it.
Yeah, okay. Sounds good. Thanks a lot.
Okie doke. Thanks, Terry.
We used to run into that a lot when incoming messages would crash your mail reader, usually because there was some crazy HTML code in it. So you'd have to go into the web mail, delete it from there before it crashes your browser. So you got to turn off the previews. And then the rest of the mail would come into your local program.
This is one of the things that happens to me all the time. I put out my weekly newsletter.
Right.
Which you can look up on AskNick.com. And it's replacing the column in the newspaper. And people send all the time, I have this, how do I deal with it? Well, you don't tell me what program you're using. So I have three choices. I can ignore you, which I do not want to do. I can constantly be replying to people saying, what program are you using, which annoys me. Or I can just put in every conceivable program that could do that thing.
Yeah. Right.
And how to do it in that program,
which
also annoys me.
Yeah.
So there's no good solution from my end.
And the other half of that is people who give you their life story. So I bought my first computer in 1973.
I was wearing red pants.
I was born in a small log cabin.
And I got a real good deal on it.
Yeah.
I had just had a sandwich. And you see, and an onion tied to my belt.
And why am I getting a message that says my disc is full?
Yep.
Well, because your disc is full. Oh, we had a poor guy yesterday. He's got a 5 terabyte Lightroom library.
Okay.
And he decided to make a new catalog file for the new year.
Okay.
And when he's importing the pictures into the library, he accidentally chose add to library instead of link to library.
Oh, so it's going to dupe it?
It's copying that 5 terabytes from his external 32 terabyte RAID onto his internal 1 terabyte drive.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not going to work.
He's going to have a bad time.
Yeah, the drive filled up. He started getting weird error messages. And okay, yeah, one little thing you miss and it messes everything up.
Hey, but it's doing what it... You told it to do.
Yeah. Yep. Computers are great. They do exactly what you told them to.
Exactly.
Not what you want them to, what you told them to.
Well, that's why AI is going to be the salvation of everything.
No.
Do you know a lot of people that can actually describe what they want?
That's exactly
using
right.
Good descriptions?
That's exactly right.
Maybe the feedback loop will be tighter between what they get and what they said.
Did you see the interview about with Bill Gates and AI?
No.
Well, they were talking to him on MSNBC about, you know, AI in the future and everything else. So it was Ari that asked him, well, is this a true picture? And what they did is how you would summarize Bill Gates and his career. And it went through the whole thing. And Bill Gates just sort of sat back there and goes, wow, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
He goes, I didn't even know. Look at it from that way. But yeah, it was. But again, it's just drawing on all the stuff that has been written. And
well, but also it makes stuff up. There was a woman who kept getting people saying, could you send me this article on this thing, which she has nothing to do with. She says, where do you think I wrote this article? And they said, it comes up in ChatGPT all the time.
And it's self-referencing now.
And it's self-referencing now.
Because GPT is learning from itself.
From itself. And she has never wrote an article on that. She has nothing to do with that. She's not even in that field.
Yeah. No, it's digital senility.
Yeah.
A bunch of authors, including...
George R. R. Martin.
George R. R. Martin have sued OpenAI,
yep.
who wrote ChatGPT for mass copyright infringement.
Yep.
We'll have to see what happens.
Part of that is the people who say... Write me a story in the
style
manner
of
So
so write me a story in the manner of George R. R. Martin, and it sits there on a blank page for a month.
Yeah. Okay. The best thing I ever saw in my entire life.
All right, get ready.
Was at a con.
Get ready, listeners. This is it.
It was at a con, and there were a whole bunch of people dressed in Game of Thrones characters.
Okay.
Walking around. Behind them was a guy dressed as George R. R. Martin carrying a Reaper stick.
Uh-oh.
Who's going to die next? The record archive...
That made me laugh so hard.
That's a good one, yeah.
I choked.
One of the local record stores posted on Facebook, someone brought in a copy of the record album of God Emperor of Dune.
Ooh.
And I think, I want that.
I've seen
some of the old videos from cons of Herbert reading Dune.
Yep.
Tolkien reading Hobbit.
Yep.
And he pronounces the names wrong.
Yeah.
At least differently than I was pronouncing them in my head.
In your head.
So it's kind of neat to see how they're supposed to be pronounced.
I have
authoritative source.
An album of Songs of Middle Earth.
Okay.
Sung by a guy named, truly, William Elvish And the other side is the Song of Tom Bombadil, read by Tolkien.
Yeah.
And didn't Leonard Nimoy do an album about
Bilbo Baggins song, yeah. Yes.
I remember seeing the music video for that.
Yes.
And, yeah, that was something.
And you can still see?
Yeah.
I sat still for a long time after watching that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, it's very. That's very funny.
The latest one I saw last night was in the style of a silent film. It's set in the 1920s of Star Wars.
Ooh, interesting.
Where all the robots are in dapper suits, and Leia's got her hair up, but is wearing like a Victorian dress. And I'll track it down so we can get a link to it on the page.
Yeah, but that's. Oh, and by the way, if you'd like to join in the party. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. But yeah, there's a lot of that going on. But that George R. R. Martin is the Grim Reaper following Game of Thrones people. Hysterical.
Classic. Yep.
Hysterical.
There was a...
I don't think... The thing that made it funny is I don't think he was part of that group.
You think he wandered
found
in there
it
by...
and just followed it around.
Just wandered in?
Yeah.
In the very early days of the TV show, there's an Australian band called the Axis of Awesome.
Yes.
And they did a parody music video about, you know, I read the effing book.
Yeah.
and yes, I know about Jon Snow. I read the effing book. it's hilarious. Because, you know, the 30, 40 years old now?
Right.
And then I had to wait 4 years for book three, and then I had to wait 6 years for book four, and I've been waiting 20 years for book five because I read the effing book.
Right. Somebody said to me, I just read Game of Thrones. No, you didn't. You may have read A Song of Ice and Fire.
Yep.
You didn't read Game of Thrones.
Well, now, see, I would be interested. I always hated when this happened. So they make a movie based on a book.
Right.
Then they change the book cover to be from the movie.
Yeah.
There's enough differences in the movie that I want to read the movie. I already read the original book. I'd like to read the movie. So maybe I would want to read Game of Thrones, the TV series, not the original.
I have a friend who writes me giant screeds for every episode of The Wheel of Time.
Okay. Oh, what's wrong? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, just what's different.
Yeah.
From her point of view, it's an abomination on the face of the earth. Because... it's not 100% what's in her head, you know? And I get that. I do get that. But it's never going to be the book. There's 14, 15 books?
Yeah.
And the original writer died. They were finished by Brad Sanderson, for heaven's sake.
That's what happened in Dune, and then his son picked up.
Right.
And they're still writing Dune books. Didn't one just come out a couple years ago?
Yeah. But, you know, get over it. It's not... the same. It's not.
It never will be.
It's never going to be the book.
I've been watching Foundation on Apple TV Plus. Second season is almost over. In fact, it probably is over by now. And it's been so long since I've read the books, I don't know the differences. And I like the show.
Right.
I hear a lot of people saying, I hate it because this is different. I hate it because this is different. And they did what a lot of modern adaptations of classic film has done. They gender swapped one of the characters.
Yep.
A lot of the characters. But I went and found a website saying list all the difference between the books and the TV. Oh, okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. All right, sure, yeah. But I like it the way it is. And I really like, what's his name?
Yeah.
The lead guy, Lee Pace.
Yeah. Well, I like Lee Pace. I like Lee Pace a lot.
I liked him in Halt and Catch Fire is where I first saw him. Yeah. And then Ronan the Accuser.
I saw him first in the Pi TV series. What was that?
Oh, yes. My wife loves that one.
I forget what it's called.
Shoot.
But yeah.
He was the Pi Man.
Yeah. I read the books just, well, while I was in rehab and had nothing else to do. I read all five books. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That is Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer.
computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm still Dennis Worcester.
Sorry. And 34, almost stepped on Dennis. 34 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. I've got some, I won't say bad news about Linux, because it's news that's not going to have any sort of impact on about 999% of anybody. The LTS, or long-term support period, for the Linux kernel is being cut down. Yes, gasp. In 2017, the kernel jumped from 2 years of support to six. Now, 6 years later, it turns out that's a lot of work.
Mm. That's not gasp-worthy. I don't know.
Where are my pearls? I need to clutch them.
At the Open Source Summit Europe, this week, Linux Weekly News Editor, Executive Editor Jonathan Corbett, announced the Linux kernel will return to 2 years of LTS support. The plan to cut back down to 2 years is an instant. The Linux community is still honoring the current end-of-life timeline, so 6.1, 5.15, 5.10, 5.4, 4.19, and 4.14 are still 6 years, but new kernels will only get 2 years. Even this six-year window was supposed to be an optional thing when it started, with the release FAQ saying each long-term kernel usually starts with only a two-year projected end of life that can be extended further if there's enough interest in the industry at large to help support it for a long period of time. The reality was that everything received a six-year lifespan, and now that will no longer be the case. Corbett cited a mix of lack of use and lack of support as the reasons Linux is cutting back on LTS kernel. Corbett said there's really no point in maintaining old kernels for that long because people are not using them. Duh. Nobody's using a six-year-old kernel at this point on Linux. The other big, and by nobody I mean fewer than 1% of people. The other big problem is the burnout for maintainers, which are often unpaid and could use a lot more support from the billion-dollar companies that benefit from using Linux. 2 years seems like a fine support window for PCs, but what about Android? The original LTS extension was mainly made with Android and the Internet of Things devices in mind. It was also announced during an Android Linux talk by Google developer Ilyan Malchev. The original picture Google painted in 2017 was that phones take 2 years to be developed and that the kernel was locked in near the beginning of the engineering process. The LTS kernel would be hitting end of life right about when the phone finally shipped, and customers would use obsolete kernels for the lifetime of their devices. The Android kernel development process is a whole pile of forks. And that is not a misnomer. First, Google forks.
Literally and figuratively.
First, Google forks from a new Linux LTS. To fork means to pull and make it your own. So you take a copy of the original and make it your own. First, Google forks from a new Linux LTS to make the Android Common Kernel. That is sent to these SoC vendors, these system-on-a-chip vendors, like Qualcomm, and they fork it for each model of the SoC that they make. Then that fork is sent to device makers who fork it again for every model of their device. This takes a while. There are also smartwatches to consider where things are even worse. The Pixel Watch is so ashamed of its Linux kernel it's not even listed in the settings. But the device launched in 2022 with a Linux kernel 4.19, which is a four-year-old kernel at that time. Rumor has it that the Pixel 8 will have a longer support window, so maybe we'll see major kernel updates launched with that phone. So do you really worry about long-term support? Give us a call, assuming your phone still works. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. I'm actually seeing that today.
Okay.
Because I just bought... it will show up this afternoon. I bought an Onyx Books, B-O-O-X, Poke 5, P-O-K-E 5, e-ink Android tablet. And it will come with Android 11.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. Because I'm just using it as an e-reader, as long as I can load the apps, all of which will load.
Yeah, that's...
It's a big problem in the cheap... you know, free with contract phones,
right?
Where you buy it and it's never updated, and so it's riddled with security flaws from the very beginning.
Right. Now, if you've got, so for example, the Pixel phones that we have, that gets the latest for several years.
Yep.
And by that point, you're probably going to buy a new phone anyway.
Yeah, the battery won't last.
Right. And the same thing with Apple phones.
Yep.
People upgrade every year, whether they need it or not, except for Dennis, who's still running a 12.
Yeah.
I got an 11.
And you've got an 11. But most people update at least every couple of years.
But I just installed the latest OS on my phone on Monday.
Yeah. Right.
No problem.
Right. And so that's...
I'm not that adventurous. So but
it's been good so far.
So I got a new phone because one of our customers got a new phone. And so it's hand-me-down.
Here, Steve, you want this? Yeah. Hey.
Well, yeah, because it...
Is it a bullet?
Apparently.
On the back of the phone.
It's been dropped too many times, and the glass is shattered.
No. It's uniquely constructed in an artistic pattern.
It's a nice pattern,
It's an art, it's an art
called,
exhibit.
But the front still
works.
The
name of the art is called Impact.
And I upgraded from a 7.
So. Yeah. It's a good jump.
Actually, so that's the problem. So the 7...
which was a great phone.
Was a great phone, and earlier, don't run the latest operating system. And so we've seen a lot of people trading in their 6s and 7s that have been still working fine. They're one or two systems old, which hasn't been a problem, but they get older and older.
Right.
Generally speaking, the big companies will support the current version, one version old, maybe two versions old.
Right.
But when you're 6 versions old, 7 versions old, you know, you're not getting those updates.
They draw the line somewhere, yeah.
And then the added complication is the new phones are using eSIMs instead of physical SIMs.
Right.
And so transferring to an eSIM can be tricky, especially if you're in one of the smaller carriers.
Mm-hmm.
You need to log into your carrier account to do the transfer, and
right.
No one ever has those credentials. So we always end up calling the carrier, you know, this is so-and-so, I'm helping such-and-such, and we need to transfer an eSIM. And can you give me the security code on their bill? No, I can't.
You're right. You can't prove that you're somebody who's authorized to do that.
Yep.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Rochester, New York. What's up, Ed?
Yeah, hi, Nick. Glad to hear you back. I just have a question about the great Google. I got ABG. I've had them for a long time, and I wanted to upgrade. Had a pretty good deal. So I went to the gyrations, and then finally says, put in your password, et cetera. And it says, that's the wrong password. So I did it a couple of times, kept getting the same thing. So I changed the password, and it still said, do not recognize the password, or that's incorrect, whatever the verbiage I used. Twice I did it. And twice it says it doesn't, so I'm stymied. I tried, I send a lot of emails to Google. Nobody responds, of course.
All right, AVG is not from Google.
So they have nothing to do with each other, so you shouldn't be using your Google password to log into AVG.
Right.
Well, when it comes up, though, when you go through, you put in your, for some reason, it must, well.
It
has my credit card in there. It must be from Google, no?
No.
Absolutely not. No. AVG is an entirely separate company. It would have an entirely separate password.
It may be using your Google email address as its account credentials.
Right. When you signed up for it.
But AVG has its own password. So if you're asking AVG for a password reset and you're not getting one from Google, then that's probably true because AVG is not Google.
Right.
Well, what's weird about it, though, when you said that, I was going to ask you about that, too, because when I bring it up, it has me under my email address.
Yes. Right.
But when you go through this gyrations about put in your password, it brings up a Gmail account.
Yes, because when you signed up for AVG, you gave them your Google account.
Email address.
Right. And things have changed over the years. So if you've had this for a while, in a few years ago, it was your email address was the only way you could log in. Now, companies are allowing you to log in with your Google account or with your Apple account or, God forbid, with your Facebook account. And so you don't have to make a new account for this one company. You can use your Google account instead. And it may be that when you created the AVG account, you used a different email address and you need that address and password to log into your AVG account.
Or you may have used your Google your Google email address, but with a different password.
Right, an AVG password.
With an AVG password. So it's a separate, it may be the same address, but it's going to be a different password.
Well, how could I get the right password to the, because I've only got two.
Well, you're going to have to go to AVG and ask, put in your email address
and use the
and tell them to, reset your password.
There's a trouble signing
but
in button.
Not through Google, through
AVG.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's what's confusing me, because I initially set it up. You're right. I've had it for several years. And when I set it up, I went into it, and lo and behold, there was the email address as the default, if you will, okay? But when you go through the upgrade from AVG using their sites and everything and the steps, and what comes up, they already have the last four digits of your credit card in there, and it's the new credit card number. So
well,
I don't know where that came from.
That's your browser auto-filling the fields. So your browser may be auto-filling the email address field wrong.
But then when you go to the next step, it'll bring up, it'll want your password, and what it brings up as an email address is a Gmail. Which
right,
I have
so that's your browser filling it in wrong. You need to type in your real email address you originally used with AVG.
Do you know what email address you originally used with AVG?
Yeah, the EVM for email. I still use that.
Yeah, so that's what you type in to the AVG account.
And that's what password you use, whatever password you set with AVG all those years ago.
So your browser is trying to be helpful, and it's not.
And that's why we say, because I'm hearing it in your voice, you're not remembering what your password was. And that's why we tell folks to get a password manager.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I have that. I got NPass,
Yeah.
But this goes way back. We're talking
if you put it in there back then, it should still be there,
right.
Or if you put it in at some later point.
On the AVG sign-in page, there's a button that says trouble signing in, and that will send a password reset to the email address you really used with AVG.
If
you're putting in a Google address there and you didn't use Google, you're never going to get that email link because it's not going to Google.
Okay, that makes sense then. Good. All right, I'm glad to call you. I'll try that. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
And by the way, speaking of password managers, 4 months ago on my to-do list was to create a page of password managers for Soundbites. And, in fact, I have done that. Under some important links on the Soundbites website, soundbites.org, bites with a Y, one of the choices under some important links is password managers. Get one today. And you can see a list of some of the password managers that are available. Obviously, by no means all of them. I have a life. But
you were laid up. You had nothing to do but read and write.
And for the first couple months, I was on some really primo drugs.
Yeah.
I wrote nothing.
Nothing intelligible.
And wrote nothing.
At least that you left around.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. The day they took me off was a day.
You may want to add something about Apple Keychain being built into Apple devices.
Email me that. Well, yeah.
If you only use Apple devices, that's a good option. But a lot of us have multiple devices. I got mad when they stopped counting passwords. I had over 600 passwords in my keychain until I stopped counting them.
600? You're a piker.
Oh, no, yeah, that was years ago when they stopped listing the count.
Our next caller is William, which I think is from Hamilton, Virginia.
Hampton, Virginia.
Okay.
Nick, I'm so glad to hear your voice again and that you're apparently in good health.
I am, thank you. Well, I'm getting there.
Yes. That's a good thing. I happened to see the same story that you read in your feed, and I have been using Zorin for quite some time now. I've not really been concerned about the fact that the 6-year LTS is ending, because I don't do anything super exotic with Zorin. I'm just pretty much a baseline home user.
Right.
That's just my two cents on it.
Well, and it's not a bad thing, but you can also update for free. In Zorin, as within so many of them, you have, you'll get a notification that you have some updates, and you hit the little button and it updates in the background and everybody's happy. But every once in a while, you'll also see there's a new version you can upgrade to. As opposed to
update. Yeah, I think Zorin just did that recently. I think like about within the last year or something like that, they did that.
Then you're on the latest version, and you have nothing to worry about. With Linux, they're all free, and they all can be easily updated with a single click. Now, granted, an upgrade from one version of Zorin to the next is a little more complex than an update of a few programs. So it takes longer, But again, it's one click and let it go. And if you've been doing that right along, you'll see it every once in a while. It'll say there's a new version. Click here to upgrade.
Yep.
And you do that, and now you're on the latest version, so you don't have to worry about the long-term support because you're in it.
Nope. Yep. Exactly.
There you go.
Yep.
Well done,
yeah,
you.
It's just, yeah, I just think it's those people who have some sort of super exotic or high performance use for Linux that
or are too lazy.
Learned about this.
Yeah.
Or are too lazy.
There you go.
Well, guys, thanks for talking with me.
Thank
Great
you,
panel.
William.
Great show. Yeah. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Have fun down there in Hampton.
All right.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Yeah.
At first, when he called, it sounded like our friend Larry.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
They sound very much alike.
Yeah. But the thing about long-term support is what we were just talking about with Liam. Most people upgrade. So they aren't, and that's one of the reasons they're not doing 6 years anymore. Nobody's using them.
Especially Linux people who are
constantly upgrading everything anyway.
Well, a little more technical from the beginning to be running Linux in the first place.
Right.
And they kind of expect it. You know, to sit there and go 6 years, it's like, you sure that
well,
there's
not improved?
Well,
that was originally for Android.
Yeah.
And, you know, even with Android, look, like I said in the news, it's so convoluted how this all works with people. The big dog has to be the last one to mark the tree, right? So Linux gets made. Google changes something. They give it to the people who make the chips. They change something. They give it to the manufacturer of the device. They change something. That's years have gone by. Years have gone by then.
Everybody's got to put their thumbprint on it.
Exactly right. So you have to understand that if you're talking about desktops, people upgrade constantly. If you're talking about phones and the Internet of Things, they update much less often. Apple has a different situation because they make the hardware as well as the software.
Mm-hmm.
So they get to know the internals themselves and can craft every version to meet their needs.
And they generally give 5 to 7 year support.
Right.
Although we're seeing 10 years now on batteries.
Right.
So if you have a 10-year-old computer, you can probably still find a battery for it on
that
the Mac.
That would be nice.
Well,
I've got a couple old Mac laptops that...
Well, those have user replaceable batteries.
A couple of them do, yeah.
Yeah, I think they stopped that in 2009.
Yeah.
2010 maybe.
But see, that's where Linux has the advantage. It's sitting there doing the updates. And a lot of folks just take it for granted that it's updating because it does it. Like for me, mine does it in the night. And I just, you know, turn it on and it's working. If I saw updates there, it'll do it later on and boom, it works.
Yep.
It's not something I have to be concerned about. I focus more on working on the computer and using the Linux. Then, I got to get, this has only got six year update. And I got to get, no, I don't worry about that stuff. Like you say, if there's a new update come out, yeah, you can go ahead and have it scheduled to do it.
Right.
And it does it in the background.
In fact, I have mine set to only look at LTS support. So every 2 years, which is not that onerous, I get a notification that says you got an update. Updates come all the time.
Yeah.
But you gave an upgrade to the latest version.
Yeah.
Okay. It's Sunday afternoon. I got nothing to do for the next 40 minutes.
Right.
Go. Knock yourself out.
Or if you're worried that it might take some time and you're tied up with it, you schedule it for later
evening. That's exactly right.
Like all your other updates that Linux does in the background without you having to worry or be concerned about.
And yes, you do have to reboot after an upgrade. Well, how onerous is that? So you get up the next morning, first thing you do is reboot, and you're done.
Yeah,
well, the problem is when you say start and go to bed, and you get back in the next morning, and it says, please enter your password.
Yeah, yes. You do need to wait that extra half a minute for the password to come up. But yeah, so it's one of the beauties of Linux is that you don't have to reboot every time you upgrade a driver or MS Paint. And so it's much easier to update things. It's much easier to upgrade things. And 99% of the time, it happens in the background.
Yep.
The most I get is if I have a new version of say, Chrome, and I'm using Chrome, I'll get a message that says, please shut down Chrome so we can update it. Okay. That's fair. You can't really update it if I'm running it.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
So, you know, yes. Okay, yes. That I get.
The biggest problem you can run into is third-party program compatibility.
Right.
So right now I'm very hesitant to upgrade to the new OS until I'm sure that my OBS works.
Right.
And so far they don't quite say anything one way or the other.
Well, and that's the other thing about Linux, because when you upgrade Linux, you also upgrade the store.
Yeah. And the person that wrote that app probably already fixed it.
And the point is, if it's in the store,
yeah,
it's known to work.
Yep.
So again, I don't have to worry about that. Now, yes, there are one or two third-party things that aren't in the store that I run, but they're very few. All the main programs I run, about 99% of what I run, come from the repository. It's not called a store. It's called a repository, the software repository. And so I know that when it upgrades the repository, it then upgrades any program. That's part of the upgrade.
Right.
It also upgrades any program that needs to be upgraded in order to work with that new version of the kernel.
Mm.
So, again, it's all automagic for me.
Right.
I don't have to worry about a thing. So that's another beauty of Linux.
Talking about upgrades and all that, that's one other thing that's kind of annoying me. I've been waiting on this one software package to come out with their latest version, because the latest version they had update was back in February, and they promised every 3 to 4 months to come out with all these, and it's all due to Microsoft.
What do you mean?
Because what they're doing is with their Access database changing things. So they're having to constantly go in and adjust the original program to work with this, and then they try to go back to getting started and to move away from Microsoft Access. But it's like Microsoft keeps moving the goalpost around, that they're spending so much time trying to keep up with that to keep their program running right now.
Right.
That they can't focus on getting away from Microsoft Access and going on to SQLite.
Yep, SQLite, SQLite is super fast.
But for God's sake, sanitize your inputs.
Sanitize your inputs.
SQL injection errors are the number one cause of problems
on
websites.
Well, but they happen in Access databases, too.
Yeah,
sure.
So they happen everywhere. And so, yes, sanitize your inputs, little Bobby tables. You've got to remember that Microsoft doesn't care.
Mm-hmm.
They do what's best for them. So when they make a change to their software, it is to facilitate what they write.
Yep.
And if you don't like it, don't use it. The Jet database in Microsoft Access was great 30 years ago. 40 years ago now? not so much anymore.
Yep.
All right. That music tells us that you have managed to sit through an entire brand new soundbite. I commend you for that, quite frankly. I commend you for that. Well done, you. But we are done for this week. This one is about to be in the books. Speaking of which, I have to tell you, they're raising my rates at my my
hosting
company.
Oh,
because I use a lot of space. So they're raising my rates. So thank you to everybody who has donated to my site to keep it running. That's helping a lot. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco. And you, it is 58 minutes after the hour. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.